Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Today is episode 2 of Doing Good Atlanta, where we feature nonprofits and the people and the organizations that are helping make a difference here in the Atlanta community. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. Make sure you are following us on Twitter at Business Radio X, and you can also follow the show, Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And also check us out on Facebook. Leave your thoughts and comments there, and we'll have some photos posted up later of our in-studio guest. Without further ado, let's introduce a roundtable full of great guests here today. First, let's say hello to Dr. Joy Fremont, chairperson of the Fremont Foundation. Good morning, Joy.
Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. It's Monday. Wrapped up a good weekend, so looking forward to hearing stories about nonprofits and in your organization. Tell us about the Fremont Foundation.
Well, the Fremont Foundation was founded in 2013 after the untimely death of my father, Dr. James Fremont. And he was a well-known obstetrician gynecologist here in the Atlanta area. Upon his death, he was practicing medicine. He was also the president of the Atlanta Medical Center. And throughout his life, he did great things. He actually delivered 8,000 babies. So
wow.
Those kids are grown up now.
I'm
probably
sure, yeah.
Some older than I am.
Maybe some of them have been on the radio show.
They may probably have yeah. 8,000 of them.
Wow.
And he always wanted to have a foundation. He always loved to give back. And actually, the day after his death, my brother set us down and said, we have to do this. And so we started because he was so well known. It was not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to give back. And since then, we have actually sent 18 people to college in 3 years. So we are so excited about that. We are giving and giving and giving, and we continue to do so now.
That is terrific for sure. An Atlanta legacy, an Atlanta tradition. We'll look forward to talking to you in more detail about that. But let's also say hello to Corey Moore. How are you, Corey?
Doing well. How about yourself, Ryan?
Very well. Thank you. And you're representing Social Georgia.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, please.
So Social Georgia came about from Georgia Give Day. I found out about Georgia Give Day, and I found out that a lot of other people didn't know about Georgia Give Day. So then I approached a partner of mine and said, listen, you know, these nonprofits are out here trying to have events for Georgia Give Day. And if they're not event organizers or planners, they typically spend more money on the event than they do on actual fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, wouldn't it be great if we actually did an event for the nonprofits? And then we said, you know what, if all these nonprofits are pretty much working in silos and doing it individually, what would it look like if multiple nonprofits came together and did one big fundraiser? So we actually created an event for Georgia Give Day this past November, had 21 nonprofits that we did a fundraiser for at 200 Peachtree. So very excited. And
yes,
that then spanned to just doing an event to actually finding out that nonprofits needed other stuff for sustainability.
All year long.
Exactly.
Right, not
so
just
we
that
actually
one day.
Ended up creating a 12-month sustainability program to where nonprofits plug into and now get education every month regarding marketing, their board, governance, grants, fundraising, things of that nature. So
that's terrific as well. Let's look forward to hearing more about that. Let's also say hello to James Franklin, CEO of TechBridge. How are you, James?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
All right. Good to see you back in the studio.
Good to be here.
It seems like I'm running to you every week now around Atlanta. I just saw you at the big event last weekend down at the Marriott Marquis. How was that for y'all?
It was a fantastic event. We're still figuring out exactly how much we raised, you know, checking receipts and those sort of things and making sure people fulfill pledges. But we're going to raise over $1.2 million again this year. So very excited.
Yeah. And tell us about TechBridge. What's the overall mission and where does some of these funds go to?
So TechBridge is basically a nonprofit that provides capacity building, particularly in the technology space for other nonprofits. Been in business for about 16 years, headquartered here in Atlanta. And over those 16 years, we've grown to serve and transform over 500 nonprofits each year in about 10 countries, but a concentration in the United States. And we have a logistics platform that moves over $500 million of food a year to 3 countries, and through the nonprofits we serve, we have over 50,000 agencies using our technology and helping over 50 million Americans. So We're very proud of our efforts, but none of it would be possible if it wasn't for the amazing nonprofits that work so hard for us and other members of our community.
Well, I know Atlanta's proud to have you as part of their community and certainly proud to have you in charge over there. And folks, if you haven't been out to the Digital Ball, you better start getting your tickets next year because it is the who's who of in Atlanta technology, Black Tie Affair. I've been there the last couple of years, and it's just an awesome event. So look forward to more information coming from James and TechBridge. But let's also say hello to our all-star panel guest here today. He's with the Orange Duffel Bag Initiative, a public charity that serves academically and economically at-risk high school and college students, providing them evidence and trauma-based programs in methodology and certificate coaching. So doing good work there. How are you, Michael Daly?
I am great. Thank you so much for having us here today.
Good.
We're honored.
Yes, and tell us about the Orange Duffel Bag Initiative.
Well, I'm proud to. We are a Georgia-based solution started in 2010 in partnership with Georgia DHS to help students who are in foster care aging out of care to stay on track to get their high school education and be better prepared for post-secondary. From that initial pilot and the data that was showing that we were able to help these young people, we expanded to include homeless students and those who are experiencing high poverty. Since 2010, we've had 700 students go through our 12-week academic and coaching program. And it's very exciting because the data shows that we are moving the needle. Mm-hmm. These students are staying on track for their education. And it's come about from a collaboration of collective impact model. So I wanted to do a shout out to our partners, the corporate partners like J.E. Dunn and Xerox, certainly the Jackson Family Health Foundation, United Way, and Georgia DHS. It's all about coming together as a community to really focus on solutions that will help these young people stay successful for their education.
That's fantastic. Helping the at-risk youth further their education or further their life mission is a great place to be, and certainly do you get an orange duffel bag when you sign up?
They do. In fact, every student that graduates our program, the high school students earn a laptop, so we're trying to bridge the digital divide and helping them be better prepared for post-secondary, and they do earn a laptop and a duffel bag. The college students earn a $200 scholarship check and a duffel bag, and they all become part of Team Orange, which is this wonderful group of connected young people who've gone through this program.
Is it just here in Atlanta, or are you guys everywhere?
It's pretty much here in Metro Atlanta, as far south as Bibb County. We're doing a class now in Rome, Georgia. We're heading to Augusta, but we pretty much cross seven counties and work with the post-secondary institutions because we host our program on a college campus. So the students can really see themselves, especially the high school students, see that they are worthy enough, they are good enough to go to college, and you really need to go to college now in order to have that economic advantage to be successful.
Yes, college education certainly can separate you from the competition out there and help you further your mission and passion in life for sure. So we got a great all-star panel of guests in here today. We're going to be diving in deeper to nonprofit, the community of Atlanta, best practices and lessons learned. But let's all circle back around and say back hello to Joy and talk about the Fremont Foundation. You mentioned it was started after your father, who was a big influence here in the Metro Atlanta area. And talk about some of the community you're servicing now. How do they find you and know that your services are available?
Well, we're located at FremontFoundation.com. That's FREEMONT, Foundation.com. And because he was so well known in the area, we actually partnered easily with the local hospital that's Tenet, which is now called Atlanta Medical Center. And we just contacted all of his people, his friends, his colleagues, and the word really, really spread. We had our first 5K walk in 2014. And with that, we went to Piedmont Park. We set out, we walked the 5K, but our scholarship donors came from around the world, as far as Switzerland. And we actually had our website out. It was kind of a challenge because we were still so grief-stricken. But the blessings came when people came out and said, you know what? Your dad delivered my granddaughter. Your dad delivered my son. So it's been wonderful. Our students that we have been so wonderfully blessed to actually attend the school come from Atlanta. They come from South Carolina, as far as California. So they're finding us primarily on our website, but we actually go hand-in-hand and go to the schools. And I'm so excited to meet you with a duffel bag project because we're going to contact you and your students help them go to school as well. So we love to give back.
So your people are coming through you naturally through your channels, but you're also actively out in the community trying to identify those places that the students need to be touched first.
Exactly. We try to get to our high-risk students because we found out that just as little as $100 may keep somebody from enrolling in school that next semester. Mm-hmm. Because my father didn't come from a rich family. He came from Monroe, Louisiana. He actually had to sit out of school one semester, and he went on to the Army, was drafted by the Army. He went to Emory University. He was picked by some of his instructors to actually go there. So he always wanted to give back. So we actually go out and reach the students in their high schools, in their colleges. So our students come from high school. We have a program for the high schoolers, our undergraduates, and our graduates. Three of our scholars now are in medical school. So we're just excited by reaching them all across the board.
Yeah, expand on that a little bit more. Talk about a student that, or two that you've helped recently and kind of take us through that journey that they were on and the services you were able to provide them.
Well, our top scholars, we named them the Distinguished Fremont Scholars, and we have three this year, and one of them is Jade Nelson. Jade is a native of Fairburn, Georgia, and she's actually attending Tuskegee University now, and she's getting a BS in veterinary sciences.
Wow.
Our goal is to pattern our students after the life of my father. So all of our undergraduate and high school students must attend an HBCU. That's a historically black college or university. But when you go to medical school or any kind of grad school, all we want you to do is just major in the sciences. So three of our scholars are all attending medical school. Yeah. One is going to Texas Tech, one is at Southern Illinois, and then one is actually going to Boston University School of Medicine. So we want to reach him all across the board, not just on the little level, but the big level as well. So we want his legacy to definitely be sustainable.
It sounds like you're doing great work out there and you're helping people along the way. What do you need more of at the Fremont Foundation? Do you need more donations? Do you need more volunteers?
We definitely need more donations.
Right. Well, more connecting donations. In the partners in industry? I mean, what do you need more of besides the money?
We do. We want to get his name out, because when someone near to you leaves you, you don't want their legacy to leave. And we knew that he delivered 8,000 babies, but what are we doing to keep his name alive? So what we need is to get our word out by either having partners like some of these wonderful guests you have here, or mainly donations. Like I said, the Fremont Foundation, our only fundraiser is our 5K walk. And you don't have to come out and walk. We love for you to come out and walk at Grant Park. That's going to be September 24.
Okay.
But we need donations throughout the year. Corporate sponsors, individual sponsors, because the more that we give, the more that we get, the more that we give away.
Right.
And we give it all away. We don't have a paid board. All of our board is a working board that we actually sit down and give and give and give.
Right. So mostly funded through donations. What about grants? Are you able to, you know, petition the government for some of those?
We have. Actually, our main grant that came this year actually came from State Farm. A local agent, Tony Williams, was able to give us a grant to help us fund our goals. So we need grants. We need grant writers.
Yeah, grant writing. That's a big
part. We need grant
writing. Yeah.
So anyone out there who can help us with some grant writings, we would definitely appreciate it. Mm-hmm. We don't take anything for granted.
Yeah, and how do you know, like, where these funds are available? From a nonprofit, you know, there's lots of agencies, corporations, government sectors that can help. But how do you narrow your focus and go after the ones you know that can be the best advantage for you?
That's where he comes in.
We're Social
be talking
Georgia.
Exactly.
So you've already worked with Corey.
No, actually, we're going to start working today.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, part of what we do here on the show is connect people through the airwaves, but also in studio as well.
Exactly.
We think that's fantastic. So you just need more volunteers as well. Is there a place for people to
exactly.
get involved?
On our website, we have a space for volunteers to actually sign up. And we need everyone's help. The people who volunteer, who especially in high school and college, who need those hours to graduate. We do give your hours. We send them to the schools, because I think in the Atlanta public school system, as well as the Fulton County school systems, those students need volunteer hours. So we are happy to provide those to you by working directly with our 5K before and after.
And now you're the chairperson of the board of directors, but you're also a doctor yourself. You have a full-time job, right?
I have a full-time job.
Right. And tell us a little bit about that.
Right. My name, like I said, is Dr. Joy Fremont. I am a dentist in the Hapeville area. I've been practicing now for 20 years, and my practice is called Fremont Dental and Orthodontic Care.
And so you're servicing teeth.
I do teeth all day,
yeah.
every day.
And then when you have a few minutes left in the day, you're out there kind of spearheading the Fremont Foundation and making
yes.
sure it's staying on track.
It's a labor of love.
Right.
I enjoy it.
But you have other board of directors who help you out. How
yes.
often do you guys get to meet and regularly and kind of map out your strategies?
Well, we officially meet every month. So we've been doing this every month since 2013. And my mother, Irma Fremont, is actually on the board of directors. My two brothers, James and Jonathan Fremont, are on the board of directors. My father's sister, her husband, and also we have an accountant, we have other physicians and attorneys on the board of directors. So we try to stay focused and try to make sure we do everything in the name of my father, that he would be pleased.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair, but we do handle business.
Yeah, it started that way in memory of your father, and it's continuing that way with everybody being on the board,
yes.
Having some sort of personal family connection to Dr. Fremont as well. But again, always looking for more volunteers, looking
yes.
for more partners in the industry to help further the mission and amplify the voice. How do you see this? Like, what's the big picture for you growing this thing in 2016 and beyond?
we want to send as many children to school. We know the people are academically challenged and financially challenged. So we don't look for the ones that always have the 4.0, even though we need for you to be a scholar. We need for those people who have a desire to further their education. As long as you have that desire, we're willing to help you. Mm-hmm. So every year, the first year we sent 8, the second year we've sent 10. We want 20, 30, 40 children to go to school saying somebody took a chance on me.
Yeah. Outstanding. And I know that you guys are continuing the good work that your father was put into place. And certainly we resonate with your mission here at Business Radio X. And if we can help you amplify your voice or get the word out, we'd be happy to do so. Tell our listeners how they can find out more information about you.
You can find us at FremontFoundation.com. Our email address is info@FremontFoundation.com. We're on Facebook at Fremont Foundation. We're on Twitter and on Instagram. So we're everywhere.
Yeah, social media, websites, make sure you can connect with them. We'll have their information posted up later on our website, AtlantaBusinessRadio.com, so you can link up to there. And so thank you so much, Dr. Fremont, for joining us. We'll be coming back to you here in just a minute. Thank you for sharing. Let's reintroduce also Corey Moore. In some circles, he's known as the CEO of the Pro Networker.
Yes.
But we're not talking about that today. I met you once at a networking event a long time ago, a year and a half or more ago. But today we're talking about Social Georgia and how you're changing the world. Why are you so passionate about this?
So for me and in my other life, I am the network king. So with that, I deal with a lot of for-profit businesses. And I understand how important it is to get out there and network, to meet more people. And that's pretty much our tagline. Mm-hmm. What I started to see that when it came to the nonprofit community, it's a lot harder. Most nonprofits do not have an actual viable product or service that they can exchange for money, for revenue coming in. And then I started really looking at them and seeing, again, some of them are working together, but most of them are working in silos. And while I'm at networking events, I don't see a lot of other nonprofits at networking events. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how are they growing their resources if they're not out meeting more people? So that's where we pretty much, like I said, I got with my partner Keon and said, you know what, we need to do something for these nonprofits to help them continue what it is that they're doing. Mm-hmm. Most ideas come out of something that has been very great or very dear to somebody. And I've always said that making cookies and the cookie making business are two completely different things. So somebody has this thought, this cause that they want to have, and they say, okay, I want to go out and do this cause. But now they have to figure out how to monetize it. They have to figure out how to sustain it. They have to continue out how to keep the doors open when it comes to this. And that stuff isn't intuitive. That stuff doesn't come by nature. So it's one of those where we said, you know what, let's attach ourselves onto these nonprofits to actually give them all this business acumen, this business stuff that they really don't want to, the average nonprofit doesn't want to deal with. I want to go out, help the community, and that's all I want to be focused on.
Right.
That's all I want to be focused on.
Well,
you have to get this other stuff.
You're right. And you got to be successful at businesses and accounting and marketing and all these other things if you want your nonprofit to grow.
Exactly.
So, but oftentimes they don't know they need the help, right? So
they don't know they need the help.
So how do you, eloquently tell them, look, you need my services?
And I'm glad you asked. It's very hard. The one thing that we're trying to get over is let nonprofits know that they're actually a business. A lot of nonprofits don't know they are a business. Mm-hmm. And it just denotes on what you do with your profit. That's the only difference what makes a nonprofit versus a for-profit business. But really, it's long-term. You can't just tell them anybody one thing in just that one time. You have to do it over a long period of time so that at some point, this stuff actually, they get it. Mm-hmm. So with that, again, we had the event. Great. Now we're actually having monthly networking events as well as beginning in June, starting to do our workshops so that now nonprofits can start plugging in at any point in time so they can start hearing the same message over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, until it finally sticks and starts to resonate, and they say to themselves, you know, I need some help. I need someone to show and guide me to a better success in my not-for-profit business. It's still
Correct.
A business. It's just not-for-profit.
Yes. Still a business.
Still a business, for sure. And so are we doing good things here in Atlanta to help kind of accelerate these nonprofits?
Yes, we are. We are very, very excited with the turnout of our event back in November. You know, it's funny when we talk about this event came together in about 90 days. And the work that we did, we built a team of about 60 people, a part of the team, within that short period of time for this one event. Mm-hmm. Ended up raising about $30,000, did not hit the goal that what we wanted, but it was still an amazing thing of what we did at that event. And the bigger piece was being able to see nonprofits that typically would not have gotten the exposure, but actually got the exposure through us. Mm-hmm. In that short amount of time, we were on radio stations, we were in the Atlanta magazine and stuff like that. But these nonprofits got the exposure that they typically wouldn't have gotten. And that was the whole goal of the actual event. Yeah, the money's great, mm-hmm. but really you want to get in front of people's eyes
yes.
that typically wouldn't have known who you were.
Yeah, create awareness for sure. So you're going to have another event this November?
Actually, we're going to have one before then.
Okay.
So what we've decided, because we did not hit the goal that we wanted to hit back in November, we said, you know, we're going to do another fundraiser. So we're going to be actually doing one in June 8th.
Okay.
My for-profit side, Pro Network, is putting on an expo, and it's a business expo. So we're doing it at the Cobb Galleria. Last year, we had about 120 exhibitors, so it's a pretty big show. This year, we decided to add Social Georgia onto it. So now we're doing a for-profit and a non-profit expo. So with that, for-profits can actually, or non-profits can set up a table next to a for-profit. Mm-hmm. And our whole goal is to get the non-profit community to start interacting with the small business community. Like she said, she got a grant, and she actually named the person
yes.
who gave it to her.
Right.
The reason why that was is because you had a relationship with them. The problem is when you try to go to Coke and say, hey, here's my organization. Can you give us $10,000? Coke is like, first, I don't know who you are. Second, stand in line.
Yes.
There's a lot of other people that want it. Versus if you know you're an Allstate agent person, you can have a relationship with them and say, hey, they might not be able to give you $10,000, but they might be able to give you $1,000. Mm-hmm. But if you knew nine other people like that, you can get your $10,000. And the red tape is so much shorter if you know that actual person, but you can't get the money if you don't have a relationship or know who that person is.
It's about the relationship, for
exactly.
sure.
So sure. that's all about the networking piece where we're saying, listen, get out there and start meeting as many people as possible, especially in the business, the small business community, because people are resources mm-hmm. and resources are solutions. So anytime that any business has a problem, when they go out of business because they had a problem they couldn't solve, with that, money is a resource, but so are people. And yes. for me, I'd rather have people than money because I can extract the money from them. So when it comes to that, it's like, now I got to get out here and meet more people.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to teach nonprofits to do.
And blending the lines between not-for-profit and profit businesses, because they all have kind of needs and wants and desires in both camps.
Yes.
So why not kind of have a place like you're doing on June 8th at the Cobb Galleria that they can come together and meet and network and learn how to grow? Because it's good business for a profit business to get involved with nonprofit.
Very good.
So why not?
It's very good.
Yes.
It shows that they actually care about the community, that they're mm-hmm. actually out there doing something in communities. And a lot of small businesses are doing things, but they're not getting the recognition for it. Not saying that they're doing it for the recognition,
right.
but at the same time, there's a lot of people who actually want to do business with cause-based businesses, mm-hmm. that want to do businesses with people who are giving back to the community. And if they're doing it, they might as well let their customers know, yes, we are doing these things. We do care about the community. It's right. not just about the dollar for us.
And we're trending more and more down that road.
Definitely.
As the millennials become more and more part of the workforce,
definitely.
We hear all the time about working for a company that they can socially get behind is very important to them. They'll bypass a few dollars on the salary
yes.
To work for a company that resonates with them personally.
Yes.
So
definitely.
So that's good. So Social Georgia, so you guys need more awareness yourself
yes,
to let more nonprofits know your services are available.
Definitely.
And you can go to as many networking events as you want. You can be out there doing great events, but you just got to keep at it and be out there and letting the community know you're available.
Definitely. We're going to have the expo in June, but then that is going to be kind of the springboard launch into our event again, November 12th. This year for Georgia Give Day, which is on a Saturday. We're super excited about that. That is our Power of Giving Conference. So that's we just changed the name to us, and now it's called
okay.
the Power of Giving Conference, which we're super excited about that. It's going to be a 12-hour event,
mm-hmm.
10 a.m. to 10 p.m. The first half of the day is workshops for nonprofits as well as for donors. Sometimes donors want to come in and find out, hey, are my donations tax deductible? What is and what isn't? Blah, blah, blah. So we're going to have information for them. We're going to have information for nonprofits. We're also going to have information for small businesses of how they can actually get involved with their community. And then in the second half of the day is the party.
All right.
So we're going to have an actual party for nonprofits, just celebrating the work that they've done, celebrating the people that have joined in to help them do the things that they do and the people that have supported them. So last year, It's going to be tough to follow. We had a fire breather last year. We had a casino experience. We had it was great. It was a great event. So we're looking forward to it.
Good. So if our listeners want to get involved with the event, or maybe they want to be out there representing their company, how would they do so?
So they would go to socialgeorgia.org. is our website. Pretty much all of the information as far as our programs, as far as our events, as far as how to get involved is there. We do have, to where I'm not a big social media person, but we do have Twitter handles and things of that nature as well. But majority of all the information is on the website.
I find that interesting. You're a huge networker, but you're not a big social media guy.
You know what? It's I am into face-to-face networking. But I will say, 2016, I am getting a little bit better on social media.
Yeah.
So with that, yeah.
Or maybe we'll do a workshop on that, right?
We need to.
Right. Very good. Well, we'll have all that information posted up on our website, atlantabusinessradio.com. So thank you so much, Corey, for joining us. We look forward to more great things from you and Social Georgia going down the road here. All right. Let's say hello back to James Franklin, CEO of TechBridge, an organization he has been involved with since 2006. You started as a volunteer, right?
That's right. I had just moved back from D.C., and a really good friend of mine called me up and said, I need you to volunteer for this organization, and that's how it started.
And then you went from volunteer to CEO. How about that success story right there, folks?
With a couple steps in between.
Right.
I ended up actually being board chair. So I got on the board, was board chair, and realized that as a board member, you have very little understanding of what nonprofit operations are like. So, being board chair and being extraordinarily passionate about the organization, I thought I really had a good handle on what was going on. And so we had a leadership change, and I started doing a new CEO search. And after about a week of that, actually the outgoing CEO, when I asked her recommendation on what characteristics should we look for in a new CEO, she goes, I think you should do it.
Just like that.
Yeah. And thought about it, and I thought that I could be helpful. And but what I realized once I stepped into it, to be honest with you, I had a lot of hubris walking into it. I had a very successful business career, and I was fortunate enough to do some pretty interesting things. And when I stepped into this nonprofit role, I thought it would be pretty easy. I thought it would be, a less complex version of the corporate world. And everywhere I went, I had people say things to me like, oh, really nice change of pace. I bet that's really relaxing. Different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, I realized that this was the hardest job I was ever going to have, and that still bears true today. But I've been doing it for about 4.5 years now, and while it's the hardest job I've done, it's absolutely the most rewarding job.
Well, what makes it so difficult to the casual listener out there? I mean, we all work hard, doing our jobs. But to you, what do you find that is the most challenging?
First was the lack of resources. I mean, you got a consistent theme when you're talking to everybody here, and it's, we desperately need donations. We'll work hours and hours to make a relationship with somebody so we can get $1,000 from them. That's not how it works in the corporate world. It just imagine if you were trying to make Uber or Coca-Cola or GE or anything, and you had to do it by spending tens of hours to get $1,000 for your big new product. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, really different. And so we had a business that needed to innovate, and we needed a business that needed to scale. And I just didn't have access to resources to make that happen. So we have done a good job of scaling, but we've done it on just the brute force capacity to do more with the TechBridge staff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the supporters that we have. So we do an amazing amount of work, and we do it with such a small handful of people. And that's the sad thing, if you will, about the nonprofit world, is that you just have so many amazing, passionate people that could do anything, and they spend their time doing this. And they do it because they care, and they care so much. If it wasn't for the generosity and compassion and skills of the people in the nonprofit sector, you know, we would live in a much worse place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly does bode true to the good work that TechBridge is doing, as there's so many people from across the metro area involved, not only giving back, but volunteering their time and getting involved with providing these technical support to some of these smaller nonprofits. How are you actively out there finding them and letting them know that your services are available?
So we tend not to do a whole lot of volunteerism around the technology work that we do. And the reason why is we believe that nonprofits should get the very, very best service possible. And volunteers are wonderful, but life happens. And so you have a family, you have a corporate job, and I ask, or someone from TechBridge asks, hey, can you deliver this really important technical project that's going to transform the way the Fremont Foundation operates? And you go, that's fantastic. And then you get into it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like a real business. They have like tons of work that they need to do, and this is going to take months. And, you know, I've got deadlines back at the office.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't go so well. So that's why most of the time, you know, 95% of the time, we have TechBridge staff that deliver our projects, and we treat it just as important as, you know, most of the people that work for us used to work at Accenture and IBM, and we have one young man who graduated top of his class from Georgia Tech. So these are very, very skilled people, and they take the same passion and dedication they would if they worked for any company as if they're working for the Fremont Foundation, for example. But it does take hundreds of volunteers to make make our mission happen. But mostly it's on the fundraising side and events and those sort of things. And we'll have a couple hundred volunteers, 200 to 300 volunteers that help with that.
Do you have other events through the year other than the digital ball?
We have a lot of events now. And you know, I am always surprised by how much work stuff is. Mm-hmm. Having events is an amazing amount of work. I'm looking at Corey and he's like, see? And so the service that you provide nonprofits is fantastic because, you know, once again, these are hard things to do. And to do them right is extraordinarily hard. Mm-hmm. So we have a series of events in Atlanta that culminate with the big digital ball. We just kicked off Alabama about a year ago to great success. We're running, we're just getting started with Nashville as a new location. And so each of these locations has an event series to raise awareness, to raise the importance of capacity building and technology for nonprofits. And to make sure that donors know that they need to support these kinds of efforts. And our goal is six cities by 2020. We've done a really good job of going broad. We serve about, last year we did 528 nonprofit transformations, and that hit 47 states.
So you're servicing nonprofits all over the country.
And 10 countries.
And around the world, internationally.
Yeah. So we're but we've gone broad. And what we found is we really want to focus on poverty, making a difference for communities, for those that are most desperate. But just because we think it's the best return mm-hmm. for the community, and it's obviously the biggest need. But what we found is when helping nonprofits all across the country is you have to have a concentration in a community if you're really going to make a dent with things like high school graduation, mm-hmm. and if you're going to make a dent on things like going to college. You know, helping one kid in a community is great. But we really want to change the metrics that communities
you want to help about. The whole community,
that's
right? If you can. And you have to do that with a large organization, with the corporate sponsorship. You can't just do it with $5 here, $10 there, volunteer here, volunteer there. You have to have a large kind of enterprise look at everything to fundamentally change some of these needs that all of our communities have across the country.
That's right.
Yeah. So as you look forward to 2016 beyond, what do you hope? What are some of the big goals for TechBridge?
Well, we want to add three more cities, and we're looking at where those cities might be. You know, unfortunately, most of the poverty that we face in America is concentrated in the South and the West. So those might be good locations for us. But you have to balance what a good location looks like for us is one that has obviously a disproportionate share of people in desperate circumstances. Mm-hmm. But also it's a giving community, one that's willing to invest in helping people that you know don't have the same advantages that we do, and then thirdly, it's a strong nonprofit network. because the way that we believe metrics can reliably be changed in a community is through the nonprofit network that do wraparound services for those that are suffering. So it's really those three areas that we look at when we decide if it's a good place to go. Mm-hmm. And then secondly is we're building the platform that's needed for nonprofits to actually coordinate information together so that they can plan out a multi-agency, multi-year path for that family to escape poverty. There's some amazing studies that were done not too long ago that showed that children that moved from impoverished neighborhoods to less impoverished neighborhoods by the time they were 13, those children made over 30% more as an adult, were more likely to go to college and more likely to get married. Kids that move after 13 mm-hmm. actually do worse than the peer group that never moved at all.
So it's a critical phase in life, you know, 13 years of age or so, that most young people are kind of not, you know, willingly, but often are set path forward on a path in life. And influencing them at that age is a good start to making sure that they're on the right path.
And it takes a lot of services and support to actually make a difference in that child's life. And it starts with the family. You have to put the family in a better place physically and spiritually and virtually. There's lots of different ways you can make an impact in that family, but it cascades to the children. And that's how we're going to make our society better.
And influencing with the multi agencies out there. So you have one that's going to help with their housing needs. The other one's going to help with their educational needs. The other one may help with some mentoring or counseling needs. And not all those come from the same nonprofit resource. You may need to intertwine them all. And that's what Correct. You guys are able to do.
Correct. Like Corey said, most of these agencies focus on the active giving. And we want them to focus on the need for sharing of data, working with other nonprofits, using analytics to actually figure out what levers can I pull in an individual's life that are going to make the most likely predictable outcome for the betterment of them and their children.
That's great. And so if our listeners want to find more information about TechBridge, how would they do so?
Our website, of course, at techbridge.org. And on Twitter, we are @IamTechBridge.
Yep. There you have it. We'll have those links posted up later on our website so you can interact with them there. And probably we'll see you next year out there as well. I'm sure if Ricky Steele's there, I'll be there for sure. But it's a fantastic event. I mean, 800 people plus this year of who's who, everybody in tuxedos except for me, and ball gowns. It was just a fantastic night for sure. So look forward to more great things from you, James, and TechBridge going down the road. And let's also reintroduce to the program, thank you for being patient, Mr. Michael Daly with the Orange Duffel Bag Initiative. They're out there helping youngsters get that college education they need. Why are you so passionate about helping folks?
Well, I'm honored to be here today. Like Jeff, I was the inaugural board chair, and we took a for-profit approach and really developed a model to have a positive impact on social issues that everyone feels is so complicated, such as education, poverty, homelessness. And they are huge issues that we have to address, but we found that if you could really just stay focused, develop a plan, and collaborate and really engage partners, you can really have a measurable positive difference in a community. And similar to what Jeff was saying, we build a community-based solution in each area that we work. And we started by simply saying, all right, what are the facts of today? And the reality is over 2 million students are in our K-12 public schools are experiencing homelessness. In Georgia, there's over 50,000 in our K-12 public schools.
Homeless students.
Homeless students. And those are certified homeless by the homeless liaison that's in every county. And all of this came about from the McKinney-Vento Federal Act in 2009 that really identified and realized that we have this just growing society of homelessness and poverty. And in Georgia, you can actually go through the Department of Education and see the stats by county. And that's what we did. We started looking at what is the reality and why aren't these young people graduating? And why are they dropping out? And how can we have a positive impact? Well, with the foster students, there's over 10,000 that are in care. Many of the students that we focus on helping are still living in residential care, which are the traditional group homes that you may have heard about. And so those are small orphanages, basically. Okay. And every time a student moves in foster care, they're 50% less likely to achieve their education. So that's the population we focused on. Very similar to what Jeff was saying, is that if you can really help a community and help a set of young people be successful, you will have a dramatic impact in that community. Mm-hmm. So we started in Macon, and we call it the Macon model. And we started by engaging the Chamber of Commerce, the school district, by talking with the deputy superintendent, the president of the chamber, the local nonprofits that were there providing services to make sure that we aligned with the strategy of the community. And we chose Macon because Macon was having over 50% dropout rate across the board of teenagers. So we knew that was an area of great need. And then we engaged the leadership of the state that were doing this work. So we knew we couldn't do it alone, but we wanted to make sure that we were adding value. So DHS leadership, the Department of Education leadership, and then the community leaders. And then we wanted to make sure that we were measurable. I think that's a critical point for nonprofits where you have passion and you want to be successful, but if you don't have the metrics and you don't hit the numbers, then you don't have investors that are wanting to really invest in that solution. So we wanted to make sure that we went out to the community, that we had something that was simple, that was effective, and that was measurable. And in order not to recreate the wheel, we engaged partners. So, for example, to have a great evaluation model, we went to Clark Atlanta University, and we worked with their master's students to develop our evaluation model. We then engaged the funders by asking for a meeting. And that's, again, different from many nonprofits, is if you have a clear plan, and if you have measurable results, and you have passion and leadership, then people will invest in you. And so we started just contacting people and saying, I'd just like to have a meeting. But we had a very clear vision. We wanted to graduate 300 at-risk students by the year 2013. We ended up graduating 350. By year 2015, we wanted to have 500 students. We have over 700. By 2018, we wanted to have 1,000. We wanted to be in X amount of counties. We wanted to have this amount of impact. And we wanted to be able to measure the success of retention and education achievement. In order to do that, you have to have access with MOUs with the districts, and you have to have access with the National Student Clearinghouse. So we made sure that we had that longevity and that measurable data to make sure that all of us who were investing our time and resources were doing something that was really making a difference. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of what I love about Team Orange and the Orange Duffel Bag, is that it is a hardworking board. I have a brilliant vice president, Diana Black, who's dedicated every day to grant writing and to help these young people. But it doesn't take a lot of people and a lot of volunteers to make a huge impact. Mm-hmm. It takes a plan, and it takes funders investing in the solution, and it takes a real positive return. But I tell you what, these are some of the best and brightest kids I've ever met. But they are dealing with trauma and have been given a set of cards that most of us would not even believe. When you talk about the trauma of foster care, the trauma of homelessness and poverty, it's just insane. And we have to do something as a community. We have to come together. And when you do, and these young people stay on track to get their education, it's powerful and it's amazing. And I'm just thrilled to have that opportunity every day.
And I think a lot of it, part of your success, comes back to what Corey was saying, the relationship building that you've done. Gone out there, put boots on the street and shake people's hand and meet them, tell them about your initiative, and then they want to get involved because they begin to know you personally as well as professionally.
Yeah, and that's really what I would encourage all nonprofits to do, and to meet one another. And that's why I'm so thrilled to be here today, because the work that you're doing, Corey, is brilliant in the fact that it takes collaboration. And that was our model from the beginning, collaboration for collective impact. If you collaborate, you can make a tremendous difference in the community. So United Way, the private foundations, the corporate foundations, people need to get involved. But what we would like them to do is really invest in these solutions as you would venture capital. You know, people think it's so complicated to make a positive impact in education and poverty, but it's not. But you really need to look at the solutions that are out there and say, all right, if you're hitting the numbers, which 85 cents or more of every dollar that's donated to the Orange Duffel Bag goes directly to students and programs, we're independently audited every year. And I mention these metrics because that's what a business really wants to know. What are you hitting the numbers? Are you making a difference? And if so, I'm willing to invest in you. But as we're talking about before, nonprofits getting sort of some donations, people really need to invest in that solution and help them with their operational expenses, because that's the hardest part. Is you can raise program funds, but raising the funds for salaries and to expand is really where the corporate foundations need to get involved and say, yep, you're hitting the numbers, I want to invest in you.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a good, effective nonprofit. It is run by someone who has been in the profit world before.
Yes.
And understands business and understands that it's not about just charging and providing a service, that it's about cultivating relationship long term so that you can grow your outreach, because that's what you're doing. You're helping people. Do you have opportunities for volunteers?
Yes, we welcome everyone to join Team Orange. We look for, in every community that we serve, caring adults in that community. So I mentioned earlier that we were expanding to Rome, Georgia. As we go into a community, we work with the faith-based community and the corporate partners, and like Action Ministries, which does a brilliant job in hunger relief. And we look for caring adults in that community to be a part of the curriculum and part of the journey of the students. So when they graduate, they have a very comprehensive life and education plan, and they have a vision, they have a direction, they have a desire. But the only way that you're going to make a difference is if you're connected to caring adults that are caring about you and your success. So that has to happen at the local level. So we really look for volunteers in that community to help those students. And then any person can get involved with the community if you just simply Google the homeless liaison in your community and really understand what is happening in your community, what the extent of poverty really is. It's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, so providing this education for at-risk high school students and college students as well is very important. And no cost to them, but the cost of college keeps going up and up and up. So it sounds like you're just chasing some dreams that may not get fulfilled. How do you balance that with the rising cost of education and the need for more students being helped?
That's a great point. Education is economic development. And if we have more educated young people, we will have a much more successful economy. And Governor Deal has been very focused on that. And by 2020, as I said before, 60% of all jobs are going to require some sort of post-secondary accreditation, a certificate or degree. And what we found is that Georgia, less than 50% of our students are graduating in 6 years. Less than 20% are graduating in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So we have an opportunity when we talk about students in general, not just at-risk students, but our college population needs help in advancing and achieving their post-secondary education. So we looked at what was holding these kids back. And as you were just mentioning, Joy, that some of it was a small amount of money that might keep them on track. What we found is that you had a lot of resources on the campus. You had a lot of resources available through scholarships in the communities, but the students just aren't connecting to those resources because they're self-navigating post-secondary on their own. They don't really have a plan. They're not navigating what is now more expensive and more complicated than it was when we went to school. So what we did with our Coaching for College Completion curriculum is help the students understand how to create a plan and then how to connect to those resources. So then after they graduate our program, attendance is better, GPA is better, and they're on focus with their funding because someone has actually sat down and helped them develop a plan. And that's what we do. And once they do, they're on fire. Yeah. I mean, these are intelligent, smart people. They just need someone to help them move forward with a plan.
Yeah, and a pathway to success. You know, oftentimes there is no opening to that road of success. And so just providing them a little bit of light on that pathway is just enough to kind of push them in the right direction. And before you know it, they're on their own and self-motivated and doing great things.
Really?
Yeah. So so if people wanted to learn more about the Orange Duffel Bag Initiative, how would they do so?
Contact us at theodbi.org. Mm-hmm. And why the Orange Duffel Bag? I'm sure a lot of the listeners want
sure,
to
yeah,
where
why
did
not?
That come from.
Yeah.
We were founded by two incredible people, Sam Bracken and Echo Garrett, and they wrote a book called My Orange Duffel Bag. And it's the story of Sam Bracken, who was terribly abused as a young person and was abandoned by the time he was 15 and living in a friend's house, but he was a great athlete. And back in those days, coaches used to take films of the students and send them out to the different colleges. Well, they did that because he felt he was smart enough to go to school and was a good athlete. And sure enough, Coach Bill Curry at Georgia Tech mm-hmm. gave him a full ride scholarship. Well, the family he was living with gave him an orange duffel bag. He packed his hopes and dreams, got on a plane. But his life changed forever when he got to Georgia Tech as an athlete because he got all of the wraparound services that every young person should get. Academic advisement, nutrition. He felt love for the first time from his college teammates and from Coach Curry. And although he was going to be an NFL candidate, his shoulders got blown out. Mm. So in the story, the students can really see that not only was there a lot of obstacles that Sam had to overcome to be successful with his high school education, but he then in post-secondary was given a crushing blow and had to make some decisions to take a different path. And so that's the basis of our curriculum, and every student earns an orange duffel bag. They pack their hopes and dreams and their plan, and now they're on their path to success.
That sounds great. And so hopefully you can influence more students, more foster kids, more at-risk youth out there. Any dreams of expanding beyond Georgia?
Yes, we have a national plan. We hope to certify our coaching curriculum, and we've been talking to several different colleges to see how we'd work with master's-level social work students or master's-level education students to teach them the concepts of executive-level coaching and how they can take the curriculum and take it to the communities that they want to move into with their career. Again, we'd welcome people to invest in this solution. It is measurable, it is working, and it's all about collaboration. So thank you.
No, thank you for joining us, and thank you for doing the good work. We wish you much success going forward. Please do come back and be a guest. Bring one of these successful youth that you've helped. We'd love to hear their story here on the airs. I know our audience would find great value in that as well. And yeah, so let's go back around the room one more time. James, start with you. How can people get in touch with TechBridge?
So as I mentioned before, our website is a great way. We have an adoption catalog on our website. So if you go to techbridge.org and look in the upper right-hand side, you'll see something that says adoption. And that's where we profile amazing causes like you've heard from today. And we give donors the chance to step in and help contribute to the transformation of that cause that you care about. Because part of our job is to raise awareness and make people realize that investing in these innovative solutions requires more than just giving them money for program services, mm-hmm. right? So Mike mentioned that it takes a full business in order to make this happen. And often, you know, someone saying we need a new financial management system is just not going to make it to the top of the list when donors are saying, how can I get involved and support your cause? So we profile those as adoption candidates. We guarantee that if we raise the amount of money necessary for that project, then we'll deliver it. We'll guarantee the results for that amount of donor investment.
And how can they get signed up again?
Techbridge.org, yep. And they can register and get involved through the adoption catalog.
And whether you want to get involved there or you're an organization, a corporation that wants to give back and you've been looking for a way to give back, you know, if you go through the TechBridge channels, you are working with Atlanta's best and brightest nonprofit groups. So certainly lean on them if you need some guidance from your corporate side of things. So I know we'll be hearing much, much more from you, James, and TechBridge going forward. But thanks so much for being a guest here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And Corey, for you, what's next for you? They got that event coming up in June.
We have that event coming up in June. So
tickets available. How can people find out more information about that?
They can actually go to pronetworkerexpo.com, and that gives them information regarding the expo that we have coming up. Actually, next week, we have a nonprofit networking event that we're going to be doing next Tuesday, the 24th. The goal for that is to try to get as many nonprofits there to actually learn about fundraising and to learn about the expo so that they now know that there's a place where they can actually participate as well. Mm-hmm. So that is at MixerSG for socialgeorgia.eventbrite.com. Or again, you can find out this information on socialgeorgia.org.
Just not social media, because that, Corey, is not social media. We'll find you there sooner or later for sure. Definitely. And you can certainly see, Corey, sometimes I hear you go to networking events like 4 and 5 per day.
On a good day.
Yeah.
On a very good day, I could hit 4 to 5
yes,
in a day. Yes,
right. So you may see Corey out and around town. And if you do, ask him about Social Georgia and how you can get involved, either volunteer or just networking, because it is about the relationship.
Definitely.
Once you get to know someone personally and professionally, you want to do business with them. Yeah. And so we encourage you to reach out to Corey and get involved with Social Georgia. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For you, Dr. Fremont, I guess you got to go back to do some dentistry work today?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And then after that, what's next for you?
The Fremont Foundation work. That's what I do at night.
Okay. So not a lot of off time for you.
No off time for me. But like I said, it's a labor of love. But they can definitely reach us at FremontFoundation.com. Our big fundraiser is the 3rd annual Foundation 5K Scholarship Walk and Run on September the 24th. Mm-hmm. We'll be at Grant Park again this year. And you can definitely find us on the website. We are taking donations all day, every day of the year. So we're looking forward to seeing more and more people out there.
Right. Are you going to be running the 5K yourself?
I will be at the 5K on September the 24th.
All right. Well, good. Well, we look forward to more great things. Please do come back and be a guest. And if we can help you out, let us know. And Michael, I guess from what I understand, the Orange Duffel Bag Annual Golf Tournament is coming up later in August.
Yes, Monday, August 22nd. We welcome all golfers and sponsors. We've been honored to have Coach Bill Curry as our co-host the last couple of years. And it's just a great way to get involved, be with fellow golfers, and really make a difference. And so we welcome you to join us August 22nd.
Where does that take place?
You can go on to Eventbrite, and you'll see it at Indian Hills Country Club. So you go to Eventbrite, put in Orange Duffel Bag, and you can see the golf event. Please bring a team. We'd love to see you. Yeah,
Indian Hills out there in Marietta.
Yeah, it's
so
beautiful.
Right, yep. One of Atlanta's oldest, but premier golf courses. So certainly get involved from there, and we encourage you. And if your nonprofit organization out there is doing something good and you're not being heard, let us know here at Business Radio X. We'd be happy to share and amplify your message here on Doing Good Atlanta. So thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.